This is W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateurs Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, nothing heard. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.955 megahertz on the Alpine 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. This net is a somewhat directed net, but it's really about having a conversation about amateur radio, telecommunications, electronics, computers, electricity, the natural phenomena, and science and underlying technologies that support what we do, the application of what we do, the fun that we have, the experiences we've had, the things we'd like to do, things we've done, the things we'd like to do again, things we never want to do again, and whatnot. So you pretty much talk about anything you want if you just tie it back to amateur radio in some arcane or remote way. This net is, as I said, a conversation. The conversation works like this. You give your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, a comment, a for sale or swap, or wanted item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. You might ask, why do you want to use none of the above? Why would you check in if you have nothing to offer? Because your presence is an offering. We will, you know, possibly call upon you. We might even direct the answers to certain questions to things that we know are relevant to your needs and interests, especially if we know you. And that's all good. Just one other little detail. If you're using this repeater, it is minus 600 kilohertz, and the TL is 141.3. Again, the frequency is 146.955. We also have Echolink access via the K2 Foxtrot Juliet, K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L for Lima, link on Echolink, so feel free to check in that way as well. We'll do the check-ins in an organized way. So, with no further ado, are there any stations whose call signs begin with the letter A? Please call K2BAR. We're A-list, as opposed to A-list. How about stations whose call signs begin with the letter November?
This is N2OEO. No question.
Okay, and Noel, you're accessing via Echolink, so while I'm here, before I take any other Novembers, are there any other Echolink stations?
This is K2ZC. No questions, no comments.
Good evening, Noel. Good evening, Dave. Echolink. Are there any other Echolink stations? Okay, very good. All right. Are there any other Novembers? All right. How about Whiskeys?
This is WA2UMP, Jim in Pearl River. Good evening, Gordon. Just listening this evening.
Good evening, Jim. Good to hear you, as always. Are there any other Whiskeys?
W3ITP, Paul Harrington Park, none of the above. Just listening.
Okay. I got Paul, W2APP, WE2R, Charlie. Welcome aboard, gentlemen. I've noted your preferences. Are there any other Whiskeys?
W2LCN, the name is Rick. Just listening in tonight.
Okay. Welcome, Rick. Good to hear you. Alrighty. Any other Whiskeys? Alrighty. Let's move on. Let's see. How about the ever-popular Novembers? We did those already. Let's try the Kilo 2s.
Kilo 2 Alpha Mike India, K2 AMI, Tony listening. No comments, no questions at this time.
Good evening, Tony. Any other Kilo 2s? Okay. How about other kilos?
Katie, yay, Gary, nothing.
Good evening, Gary. Welcome aboard.
Alrighty.
And the other kilos.
KD2EFJ, this is Paul, calling from Singali.
I missed your call. Try that again, please.
KD2EFJ, Kilo Delta 2, Echo Foxtrot Juliet. This is Paul, no questions, no comments.
Okay, KD2EFJ, thank you very much. Bonsoir, monsieur. I detect a French accent, so I'm speculating, but anyway. Welcome aboard. Are there any other kilos? All right, any other call signs, any type? Okay, wow. This is going to be a tough net tonight, but all right. We got a couple of announcements. We'll start there, and then we'll look for others. Maybe one of you guys has a question, comment, or other. The first thing is that basically a crash course and study session for the technician class license on Friday, December 27th, at St. John the Evangelist Church basement in Bergenfield. So if you have friends who might want to get their license, it'd be really good. If you're looking for the study materials in advance, there's a lot of study materials available for free online. I can email them to you, both in Word documents and other things like that, as well as online resources that are free. And so if you email me at whiskey2tango@att.net or ARRL.net, I will cheerfully forward that on to you. We start at 8 in the morning, and we go to about 6 o'clock in the evening. You're responsible for your lunch. We'll order in, or you can bring your own. And for dinner, we do provide a pizza dinner. At 7 o'clock, the test session comes, and test team W2JEK and company come in and administer exams. So we'll have a good group there. The fees for this, there's $20 for the course during the day, which is really a donation to Boy Scout Troop 139 for their amateur radio program, and helps facilitate the acquisition of radios, parts, occasionally some subsidies for licensing support for some of the kids who otherwise might not be able to get their license exam done. And then there's a $15 exam fee that the FCC stipulates that the test team will collect in the evening. Just for reference, the start at 8 o'clock, we gather at 8 o'clock, and we're pretty much rocking and rolling by about 8:15, so keep that in mind. It is a Friday, but it's a Friday at the end of the year. A lot of people can get off that day, so we found that to be very successful and helpful. Let's see, what else can I tell you? I think that's about it for that. Any questions on the licensing? Well, in the last 10 years, about a little over half of our scouts have gotten their radio licenses. It's rather interesting to watch, to say the least. So we're in a good mode for that. The next thing is that we have a thank you. Those who came to the Hamfest and flea market, we really appreciate it. Over at Bergenfield last week, it was a great fun, and I think everybody had a good time. The weather kind of zapped us a little bit, but the attendance for the women shoppers and sellers was far outstripped out of the ham vendors and shoppers. It was kind of amusing, actually. Really was. But anyway, a good time was had by all. So again, thank you. And then, is there anything else I can think of right now? I do have some for sale items myself. But let's take some check. I'll see if there's anybody who has any questions about licensing or want to check in. Please call KTBAR. Alrighty. Well, there we are. With no further ado, let's move forward and get one other thing on the plate. I had some specifically, I have a tower which I've been advertising for a while. It's a tubular tower. It's only about 26, 27 feet, but it's cable driven. It doesn't require pneumatics or hydraulics, and you don't need to carry a compressor or worry about seals. It used to be on my van, and I don't have the van anymore, so some people have considered using it in a fixed position where they have stealth problems, and others want to use it for field day and things like that because it's really easy to handle and gets your antennas up real, real fast. I mean, you can add a 15-foot mast to it, and your antennas are now 40 feet in the air. So it works out real well. The other item that I'm putting up for sale is I'm selling some Kenwood THF6s with both the stock battery and some expanded batteries and chargers. The only problem with the expanded battery is the little clip on them has broken, so you need to secure the battery with a stout rubber band, but for your trouble you get a 3800 milliampere hour battery. Somebody is interested in that. It comes with a bunch of other accessories, so let us know and let me know. Anybody have any questions? Okay. Well, this may be the quietest net we've had in forever. We've had better nets on Thanksgiving, I swear. In fact, we did have a better net on Thanksgiving. But, so my apologies, everyone. But if no one has any further news or interest, then we can secure, I suppose. So this is W2TTTK2BR. Anybody else have anything they want to add or check in?
W2FPP?
2BAR, this is W2LCN.
Okay, I have two. Paul and also Rick. So Paul first.
K2BAR, W2FPP. Just a quick comment. Keep an eye on Amazon these days. Today I actually managed to hit a Baofeng 5R Plus for $29.17 shipped on one of their gold deals. So those things are popping up. Just keep an eye out. If it's there, just jump on it. If you need a question, I can throw one up later on. W3APT, back to K2BAR.
They're a really good piece of advice, Paul. Yeah, I've seen those too, and you know what it is? The UV82 is out, and they're selling sub-$50 shipped. So it's driving the price of UV5Rs and UV5R pluses and RE pluses down.
Yeah, they're down in the basement, but at this point it's like, yeah, you know, it's buy them and stack them. You never know when you need them.
Exactly. Yep. I find them amazingly inexpensive. Alrighty. Anybody else have any, anybody else have any comments on Paul's topic? Right, thank you, Paul. Rick, your question or comment?
Hi, K2VAR, this is W2LCN. I guess I've got two things that I'll throw out there if nobody's got any ideas. One of them is just some great news that I came across. I have that team of the technology students at the school, and we've been trying to work towards a goal of getting this VEX robot, but it all in total runs about $1,500, and it's very difficult navigating through the politics of a school system to try and get money for things like this. I asked a simple question, and the answer I got 3 days ago was, I will contact this gentleman down in NASA who is able to provide funding for this robotics kit for first-time clubs. And lo and behold, 48 hours later, I have on its way, being shipped right now, one of these VEX robots that it's basically an erector set on steroids, and it uses a programmable base to control a number of different sensors and things like this that are very, they're not like the Legos where they're kind of proprietary to what you're doing. You can add and take away from this system. But I got the whole thing ship, and it's actually on its way here right now. And I was very happy with the folks down at NASA and Northrop Grumman and a number of other people that contributed to this grant and made things happen. And I was able to put things through with a simple coupon code and make it all happen. So I will send it back over the net for a comment. But I just thought that was a great fact and something that the kids are going to benefit from. And eventually I'll kind of have put together so I can show other people, like the Boy Scout group or anybody that would like to, you know, play around with this this thing once they have it completed. This is W2LCS. Send it back over to you, Gordon, K2BAR.
Reading my mind. So the question comes, can you just be a school group, or can it be a team from, you know, a youth group of some sort?
K2ZC disconnected. N2OEL timeout.
A Title I institution, I believe that's a tax-free type institution, such as probably a Boy Scout group or a church or something like this. I forget what the third criteria was, willing to compete in a VEX robotics event. So there's events all over the place, and it's just a matter of picking one. So I believe that there is a definite way to get this done and make it happen. I guess you'd need to take a look. I can shoot you some paperwork, and you can take a look at it. It's like literally two or three pages to outline what they would like to see you do, but it literally seems like you must be a nonprofit looking to promote science and education through a C-plus based robot.
Okay, very good. Very good. That's really intriguing, because if there's funding for first-time group support, that would be huge. And I definitely have boys interested in such things. And we'll go from there. I'm in the process of figuring out a way to essentially turn the outdoor program of our troop over to other assistant scoutmasters because of both time and physical limitations, and also business requirements. And so, to complement that, I want to up-notch the technology of our Boy Scout troop and venture crew. So I think that would be a really, really good thing. I've got a bunch of older boys who clearly need regular challenge enhancements. They're all super bright. A lot of them are taking advanced courses in high school. So it's really kind of a great opportunity. That's why we get the PAM licenses and other things like that. But we can really make this work.
WJFP.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just sort of tying into that, it's been doing, poking around a little bit with code.org, which is one of these new initiatives looking to promote computer science into schools, groups, whatever. One of the things I'm sort of toying about with myself is, you know, buying up a load of pies, a load of screens, put together some, like, little just terminals to then try and get kids interested in just basic programming. If that's something that your scouts want to get into, then, you know, like your go kit with your radio, you have your go kit with your computer. You know, the scout walks in, opens it up, opens the box, hits a button, says, okay, let's go code. Let's see what cool stuff we can do. There's a lot of good stuff out there. I think Zuckerberg stuck a boatload of money into this and a load of others as well. So it's really taken off. And the big kick on it is, you know, like, taking our learn code, you know, all our kids should be able to write computer code straight out of the box and sort of tie in on the top of that, to extend it out and, you know, get the entrepreneurship coming back out of the kids, get them really driving into that side of the world to say, okay, go release your creativity.
Yeah, I actually took a Raspberry Pi and a an AVI monitor that I had the adapter for HDMI, and a keyboard, a mouse, and a prototype area. And I actually built that. Well, I don't think you've seen it, but Rick's seen it, and it's now a lot more stable than it was. In fact, Rick, since you last saw it, I actually installed installed the protostrip so that you can, you know, build circuits right in there and not kill yourself. And I did it by doing something even more obnoxious, and that is by putting a second Raspberry Pi in there that we secure a shell into. So that way you have your essentially your terminal, then you have a Raspberry Pi, a second Raspberry Pi to run executable code on and mess with, build circuits on, etc. And in fact, if the kid has their own laptop, they can do that as well. But they can just plug in onto that. I haven't dropped a router in that box yet, but that'll probably be the next thing. Either a router or a small hub. So, you know, I'm getting a lot of dual-purpose functionality out of it for work, and I set it up so it'll also meet these requirements as well. Rick, did you want to add anything to this?
I did just, I showed you an email with some of that information. It looks like it's got to be a school, but take a look at that. It's just two pages. And Paul, I'm glad you just mentioned that because it's kind of funny, but it's something that I've been working to piece together is a program that like that that fits some of the higher level thinking skills, but it's really focused at playing almost. And the Raspberry Pis are like tremendous in this. The other thing is the Arduino, but it's kind of nice to know that you have that interest because one of the things I'm trying to build this around is helping people to become ham radio operators through some kind of like employment, basically. I got a couple of family members in mind that are looking for different things to do during the summer, but it's pretty cool because at some point I may be able to sit down and talk with you and say, you know, what do you think would work, and just exchange ideas and, you know, maybe even have run out and do one of these functions with the kids, because this type of thing, dropped in the lap of one of your students, they love it. They just take it and run with it, and all of a sudden it becomes fun and exciting. I'm seeing it right now in the class, and I'll be honest, I think the only real experience I've got from the coding, in addition to going out to Connecticut for that TI Institute, was really working with all of you guys, but... So it is kind of cool, and it would be a tremendous benefit. It's just awesome. When the kids see it, they light up. So, yeah, thank you for throwing that back out there, Paul. Other than that, no, I don't think I have a comment on this. I do have that one other comment. I'm just trying to think what it is offhand, but I'll send it back over to Matt. K2BAR.
Have any thoughts? Alrighty, Paul, back to you then.
Yeah, I would advise anyone just go take a look at www.code.org and check out what they're doing. And if there's anything there that you reckon you can leverage off, yeah, give me a shout because I'll always be interested. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I'll put some stuff together, try and get into my school in time to see if, you know, if they're going to. I actually walked into the computer lab. I was absolutely disgusted. It's like the amount of dust that was built up over the front of the fans was incredible. So I gotta go talk to the principal and say, you know, like, yeah, it's time you and me actually got together and started kicking this computer science lab into actually doing something useful instead of just kids drawing cartoons. With that, I'll send it back W2APP back to K2BAR.
Good, Paul. Well, I would not have expected that from your town's grammar school system, that you'd have that kind of what I'll gently refer to as functional deficit and utilization and application, inspiration, whatever you want to call it, for the kids. But it is what it is. I know my son's former grammar school has gone to all laptops. All the computer labs now are laptops, and Yeah, it's just really kind of neat. You know, no CRTs, no flat screen. You know, they have every kid in the computer lab, you know, has a laptop, and they spend a couple hours a week in that computer lab from grade one on, and even the kindergartners and the pre-K kids get an hour in the lab. What they do there is they break it down into two half-hour periods for the kindergarten and the pre-K because of the necessity of attention span for little kids. But it really is kind of amazing to watch. In any case, that's really good. The thing that I've noticed about the Raspberry Pi is that if a kid has a laptop access or a computer of any kind with an Ethernet port on it, you know, your best setup for the Raspberry Pi is just to use the wall wart and secure a shell into the darn thing. Don't try to beat your brains in with a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse. Number one, it's a little slow, and number two, it adds cost that you don't necessarily have to replicate. So you could have a whole raft of Raspberry Pis on a router or a switch, and essentially just assign people which one you want them to connect to run their experiments and blah blah blah. And you could actually have that as a fixed item and have the workstations that way, so they take care of electronics, and then they go back to their programming terminal and, you know, take their code and upload it and test it, blah, 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 blah. They can do that across the net. And that gives them the sense of what, like a precursor step to cloud computing, where you're using a remote resource to accomplish a goal, a network-enabled function, if you will. I think that's kind of neat. Anybody else? Well, let me also just point out that for those who wonder whether or not the Raspberry Pi has any efficacy, there's FLDigi for it, and it works amazingly well. There's also an open office suite, which if you've seen OpenOffice before, a lot of it was based on, you know, 2003 kind of target as a model. But they've upgraded it considerably, and the latest version of OpenOffice is quite, you know, quite the package. And it's free, both on, well, Windows, iOS, and also Linux platforms. So something to think about as well. So that's just another side benefit of it all. So you could actually make a network-enabled FLDigi station, and you can actually not only secure a shell into it, you can also connect into it via a remote Windows capability using VNC. So that's all built into the Raspbian Linux build. Anybody else?
K2BAR, this is W2LCN.
Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
I just wanted to add something to that, because I don't know if you're going to jump to the next topic, but I wanted to comment on the QST article that they're running right now on this virtual radar.
Yeah, we can get to that in a minute. You know, that is kind of a neat thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let you go through what you're doing, but I just wanted to... It's going to come back to the Pi anyway, but there's an interesting link that I just wanted to share, and I think Paul would get a kick out of it too, because talk about teaching code, you can teach him some great stuff and jump back over to Linux and get into this. But I'll let you finish up here, and I'll throw it back over to me whenever things get wrapped up.
I'm sorry, we just came up River Road, and there's like now five or six police officers. There's a multi-car accident, including a tree, involving multiple cars in a tree. You know how that is, so it's not real pretty right now. So anyway, we'll come to that in a minute, but this whole idea of getting youth involved, I think, is really, really important. But yeah, you got to prepare yourselves, guys. I mean, you know, this stuff is, you know, out there. You can build a really nice home security system based on a Raspberry Pi. You can build a surveillance system based on a Raspberry Pi. You can build a XMBC, a media server. For streaming content, there's a lot of great streaming content. Someone told me about WYSIWYG.TV, where you can find all NHL hockey games for free. WYSIWYG.TV. And needless to say, I want to try that on a Pi. I don't know if they support the right codec, but needless to say, I'm going to be trying that on my Pi, not to mention my wife's iPad and a few other little goodies. So that's all something to consider. Anybody else have comments on this? Paul, why don't you put the ribbons on the topic then?
Connected N2OEL.
All right, Rick, why don't you take it and go on to the next topic?
All right, Gordon, this was just a comment kind of adding on to that Raspberry Pi thing, and it may fit into what Paul had been talking about earlier, but I was amazed at this virtual radar from a digital TV dongle. The article on page 38 is this month's QST, and the idea of it is pretty impressive. I mean, they've basically taken something that is inexpensive, plugged it into the computer, but the part that I like is after you do a little manipulation on a piece of software, and after you buy this super cheap little dongle, you get to put together this antenna. The antenna, you can get it free with the antenna on Amazon, or you can build your own. And there's a couple of sites that are just fantastic for giving you different ideas to build this antenna up. I found these things online all over the place for $10, but the end result is basically an antenna that will monitor the air traffic, report it to a server. The server will then spit back out the information to be viewed on a web page, and you can see live information all being broadcast right over your computer. And I thought, what a great little way to add $50 to the course of some training for a student. Send them home with a Raspberry Pi with this dongle and a homemade antenna to go stick on the, you know, their parents' roof or, you know, hang up in a tree to be able to have all the air traffic around your area being displayed on your home television or something like that. I think it's something that would really spark a lot of interest. It's a lot of fun. It'd bring relevance to some people that are flying routinely or just traveling for the vacations and things, but it's pretty incredible to think that for, you know, under $50, you can have something that somebody can learn and play with and really kind of benefit from and still continue to grow it. It's pretty awesome, but I'll send it back over to the net, and I'll throw out this website if anybody has any interest in it. This is W2LPN.
Oh, what it is that there's a new telemetry requirement for, you know, general aviation, commercial aviation, both, to essentially telemeter their height, position, and identity. And so what it does is you just collect that off out of the air, and then it's aggregated. I didn't read the article in detail, but must you be on the Internet for it, or is the server your computer, essentially, that aggregates all that down?
I believe the information is sent back from the server. And you gotta have, you gotta be connected to the internet. I believe you're able to get local information from this this small antenna, but I don't think that anything flying, you know, 40 miles from you, you're gonna pick up. So you won't be able to see things once they're out of range. But I think that's where the server steps in and takes the data being collected from all sorts of different areas, including the ones that are coming in locally from you, and spits that back into I guess like a graphic interface. I haven't put it up yet, but I put both programs in and ran them, and apparently I need the TV dongle. I need to spit some information into them to get information back out, but it seems pretty simple. I do think it has to be hooked up to the server, though.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. That's exceptionally cool, actually. Alrighty. Then that certainly can be done. Without too much fanfare. I'm pretty impressed by the whole thing. I'm wondering if there's other applications for that. What I'd like to know is, like, what their altitude is, and then and what the air temperature and humidity might be at altitude, but I don't think that's in the telemetry package. But essentially, you know, like weather APRS, but in three dimensions, you know, that might be a wickedly cool thing. But like everything the FAA does, it's 20 years too late, and just be happy it's there at all. It's probably going to, there'll probably be plenty of aircraft, unfortunately, who are not part of the game reporting this information for quite a while, but it's still pretty awesome.
It's just a comment on that. Let me just see if I got it.
Hey.
Okay, one of my students at the school is studying to become a pilot. I guess his dad's into flight, and I guess they're working out of the Lincoln Park Airport. There is a piece of software, and he knew this program as soon as I mentioned the letters. I think it was ADSB Sharp is the program, but as soon as I mentioned ADSB, he immediately commented on it and said it's great because he can use it to determine, he did say temperature, and he said disturbances in the air pressure, he said, which can create more turbulence. He said there's a number of different layers that he can look at using some part of this software. I believe it's a free system that he's working with, but it does give you information based on altitude and specifically the weather at different elevations, which is that three-dimensional part you were talking about. I'll have to ask him more tomorrow if he can give me more information on that.
I'd love to see that overlaid onto you know, the National Weather Service data. I think that would be just wicked cool to have that. You know, here's what we think from the ground, and here's what we know from the air. And you know, to layer up and refine based on what I'll call euphemistically ground truth.
I think the whole thing is kind of impressive to be able to link it up, especially throwing it on a Pi, because I don't have to tie up the computer. I could tie up a Raspberry Pi, and for what I'm seeing so far, I can literally tie up not just the Pi, I can just tie up an SD card and use the Pi for whatever I want, which is kind of nice. You can literally get a $6 card, put the operating system on, get your whole software load and everything ready to go, and it seems like drop it into the machine and let it run.
Yeah, you certainly could, but, you know, if you have a way to you know, get a window display machine to log into several Raspberry Pis, there's no reason why you couldn't have them as little dedicated microservers, each doing their own thing, you know?
It's this shelling in, or I think you said SSH, that the whole idea is still new to me. I played around with it a little bit, and it's pretty interesting, but you're probably right. You could probably have it doing a lot more than what I'm actually working with, but this that whole idea, which is fantastic, by the way, I've used it a couple of times for silly things, and I love it. Like, I don't even have to have the monitor or anything else connected to it, and I can get in. That's kind of cool. So I'm still trying to figure out how to work with it. But, yeah, these little things are inexpensive. I think Arduino came out with another version of them, but... there's one other company that just came out with something like this, but yeah, the Raspberry Pi is definitely a pretty cool little piece of cheap hardware.
Now, there's something that's along the same line as a Pi that's got twice as much capacity. There's the BeagleBone. There's the new, you know, Arduino thingy. I mean, there've been a couple of intermediate steps, but there's a new, you know, more powerful, more interesting Arduino thing. So a lot of stuff out there, but you know, there are also people taking Arduinos or Raspberry Pis or whatever and combining them to make essentially a distributed supercomputer. So they'll take capacity from all these things to crunch numbers, to render problems, solutions to problems, etc. And pretty neat the way that works. Anyway, back to you, Rick. If there's anybody else who wants to jump in now.
WJAC.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, let's bring back Seti. Yeah, I think with the Arduino, I found a nice thing, which was you can basically just buy the chips and build the boards yourself, which brings it out a lot cheaper. One of the things I had thought about was, you know, like doing like grid computing with Pi. It's one of those ones, if I ever get some time to myself, that, you know, I can start playing about with it. But yeah, on the distributed side, getting up a nice grid, you know, doing, you know, building your own mini supercomputer at the end of the day, if you get enough chips, the address space is there, you know, they've got the capacity. At the end of the day, it's just tying in memory and offline storage, and away you go.
Well, a guy at work, or two guys at work actually, put together a dozen of them. Or was it 20? I think it was 20. On a 32-port high-speed switch. Tied them together on Ethernet, and actually, I forget the code that they used, but it's an add-on to the operating system so as to have them, you know, act as a collective operating system. It's pretty neat, and worked very, very well. And it's really not cost-effective, but it was done as a way to model out some virtualized network functionality that could be done on an as-available basis. In other words, you take the same CPUs that might be used for one purpose, and if they're not being called upon to do their primary function, you know, they'll do what might be considered lower priority back office functions, with, let's say, thereby, you know, saving dollars. So using the Raspberry Pi, or a matrix of Raspberry Pis, they're able to demonstrate that notion pretty effectively.
Yeah, take that down to $5 Arduino chips. When you network those together, at the end of the day, you don't need the Ethernet out of it. You know, at the end of the day, the backplane is just going to be whatever you build it together. You know, in some ways, the Ethernet's actually going to slow it down. So, yeah, there's a lot of potential there, and it is cheap.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, you'd probably want to use, you know, if you're going to directly tie silicon together, you really want to use a higher capacity piece of silicon, but your point's well taken. There's notions of optical links and a few other things, but it's not quite there yet, but it's getting there. Anybody else? Okay. Very good. I do have another Well, Rick, why don't you put your ribbons on this one, or if you want to extend the conversation, that's fine too. But I have something else to add, another topic related to the mesh networking stuff. There's some interesting news.
Sorry, Gordon. That's great. We've covered a bunch of nice stuff. I know we didn't have a lot of comments out there originally, and between that vector robot and that radar system, I thought, wow, there's a lot of good stuff going on out there. It's kind of neat, so it's just a matter of jumping in and playing around with it. So I'll send it back over to you. No, take it away. This is W2LCN, back to K2PAR.
Okay. W2TTT, as it were. All right. One thing to consider was that, they ported the software to the mesh software to the Ubiquiti platforms, and it's worked out really, really, really well. So, with that in mind, I did apply for and was accepted on the beta test team. And now we have to cobble together a network of some Ubiquiti devices and some legacy Linksys devices and run very specific test scenarios. So I am looking for volunteers to essentially obtain and then spend at least a day, probably a long day, doing testing of all the platform tests that they have. They have a very specific suite of things. And the user interface looks more like the Linksys. In fact, it is the Linksys user interface, not the MeshPi user interface, which has other intriguing ideas along the idea of virtualization of services and things like that. But they didn't take that jump. They just basically did a straight port up to the Ubiquiti platforms. And they would like compatibility testing accomplished. So if anybody's interested, we can actually embark on this, but we need to get 3 units in place and relatively soon if anyone's interested in doing that. Over.
W2LCN, it sounds interesting. I'm in to help out in any way I can, so... if you have details on it, as you know what you're trying to do, let me know and see if we can wrangle up a couple of people that want to try and piece this thing together.
Yeah, they have a very, like we did early on when we were getting ready for the fireworks, we probably set up in a relatively spacious facility and just, buy pizza and just keep going until we're done. It's not that complicated, but it's fairly straightforward. Each person can do their own loads of the software, but they've asked that there only be one point of contact from this team, and not 5. So we'd have to deal with it that way. But I think it'd be great to do. I was thinking of you, Paul, Gary. And anybody else who wants to, we're more than game. The nice thing about the Ubiquiti stuff is that it comes in a variety of capabilities and form factors, and they do have a memory model requirement. So what I'll do is I'll put that information up on the ComTech group, and I'll share that. And if anyone wants in, we'll go from there. But I think I'd like to, there are a number of economical Ubiquiti products out there that we can use. They don't have to be really crazy expensive ones, but we want to stick to the 2.4 gig stuff. That is the one, should we say, practical constraint. But beyond that, there's a memory model requirement, and all the current Ubiquiti products, keyword is current, support the memory model that the software supports. So you get more memory, more CPU, and in some cases higher power. So it's kind of neat. So if anyone's interested, just shoot me a note at w2ttt@att.net, and I'll let you know. But also add you to the contact group, and we'll put it up on the contact group, etc. Anybody else?
WCATP, put me time, dips, and time.
Okay, that's good, Paul. Yeah, very good. That's one, and Rick's two, so we're one and two is respectively. But we can take others as well. But yeah, we'll just have to spend a day and just rip through the stuff. Because they have very specific test cases, which I'll also forward to you, so you know what you're in for before you go commit to a box. But I'll send you the, if you will, the rather capacious buyer's guide. You got plenty of choices, you know, from really expensive to really complicated embedded stuff with dishes and all sorts of crazy stuff. So any of it's all good. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Power level. Again, it's memory model and frequency, the two things. Anybody else? The other question is, has anyone heard from Randy? I haven't heard Randy Smith on in, like, a while. Anybody know what he's up to? Okay. All right. Well, so thank you, Paul and Rick, for your responses. Let's see, Rick, did you have anything more? Paul, did you have anything more?
I just have a quick question, if you've got time.
Is this a shift in subject? We can do that, too.
Shift in subject.
Anything else on this subject before we move on? Well, if Sunday works out the way I want, we should have the note up at my house, and possibly by then a note up at St. John's in Bergenfield up on top of the school. We got that all squared away this week, and the one box for remote mounting at the school is all built, and it's a matter of just feeding it with power, and away we go. So, pretty exciting. All right. We're starting to get what I'll call mid-sized marquee sites. That should work real, real well. So, over to you, Paul. W2APP, K2BAR.
K2BAR, W2APP. Just a quick question on antennas. I'm sort of site-limited here on what I can actually put up. You know, I can't put up a big beam on a rotator as much as I'd love to, but that's not going to happen. I have a G5RV stuck out the back, but the polarization of it is giving me sort of into Africa, into the, you know, the Caribbean, but I think just picking up big swathes of the, you know, the ocean. Question is, what can I really do here? Do I just sort of put up another G5RV in 90 degrees offset to sort of try and get that? Do I look to put up a vertical just to try to get something omnidirectional? It would have to be low to the ground or not that too far up. Do I go to sort of a few hamsticks 20 feet off the ground, which wouldn't get that much attention, or do I try and do something like a rotatable loop that I could sort of stick up and stick a basic rotator on it? If it's not that big, it won't be that noticeable. Just sort of wondering what people's thoughts were, if there's anyone still around. W2APT, back to K2BAR.
So, how high is your G5RV right now?
At the moment, it's about 30 feet up. Just strung up between, a set of the ubiquitous green poles and some telescopic poles that I have.
Okay, and do you have the capacity to put up another G5RV 90 degrees to it that's not overlapping with the wires?
I could do, but it would sort of be more a T version, which I'm sort of thinking, you know, at that point then I look to sort of, if I'm going something 90 degrees, then I'll probably go something either end-fed or offset.
You might want to try that just for simplicity. You know,
you know, the easiest thing to do is set up an NFED. If you have a tuner that will support it, why don't you just do that real quick and just to give yourself some diversity, you know?
Sort of the problem with that is that if I do that, then sort of the 90 degrees that I have is then I'm now shooting towards Greenland on one side and then Texas versus the other, which sort of is not really where I want to be in some ways. You know, in some ways I actually like to, you know, that's the whole thing about the rotators. I think I actually want to be like 45 degrees, just tilt my whole house and then, or tilt my whole plot, and then, you know, a lot of this issue would go away.
Would you be able to put up a mini beam, you know, with a two-element thing? That it sort of looks like a two-element Yagi, but it's got little starry-looking elements on the ends, and they're like little capacitance hats, and it's got this little start of diamond-shaped kind of element thingy for each of the two elements. Have you ever seen one of those?
I think I know what you're saying, but even with that, you know, like a two-element Yagi for some of the bands that I'm looking, you know, sort of 40 meters up into 80 is still going to be, like, pretty big. I do have some trees that I can go into, but if I'm into the trees, I can't get that much height. Otherwise, I'm into the canopy, and at that point, then I can't rotate. You know, so it's like, you know, a vertical would be good because at that point, it just goes straight up. And then I'm sort of wondering, is like, you know, at the end of the day, if I stick a hamstick of 20 meters, you know, is that actually just going to get me the best that I'll probably get?
No, well, probably not. Probably not. You're probably better off with an end-fed wire, I'll be real honest.
Okay. At that point, then, I'll probably look to either end-fed off into trees in various directions and then just try and control it like that. I was sort of thinking, like, if I then get into something like a loop that I could rotate, then, you know, that might actually be part of the, you know, the loop would be a lot less conspicuous than, you know, a wagon grid beam floating around.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just think that the notion of the N-fed wire is just a good utility antenna to have. If you can load it and you can make it work on a bunch of bands effectively, then why the hell not have one just because?
Yeah, I understand that, but it's just the, at this point I'm sort of looking into more, I need more rotation capability than just simple, you know, like N-fed, I'm getting out of, you know, I got two loops coming out either side.
So, not too many years ago actually, there was a guy who did a 31 or 40 odd foot, 43 foot vertical, and he elevated the radials. He didn't have too many radials, but here was the interesting thing is, having more radials elevated, even if they weren't resonant, was more effective than having ground-mounted resonant radials.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Actually, I pass that one past the wife and see what she thinks on that one.
What you would do is you would take a 12 or 16 foot 4x4, pop it 4 feet in the ground, and build your antenna on that so you could use some aluminum tubing on insulators on there and get it up in the air. And then what you could do is you could fan out some radials that would be well above anybody's Garrod's point. And you could even extend the aluminum with a fiberglass pole and run a stout wire from the end of the aluminum up along the let's say a fiberglass extended pole to get your height with minimal, shall we say, structural nonsense. And it would get it way off the ground, you know, for the cost of a 4x4, you know. And come to Gordon's house of surplus aluminum, and I'll be happy to send you home with what you need for at least the base section of an aluminum vertical.
Yeah, hey, I've got to watch with vertical, so is that comfort or anything permanent? And, you know, at the end of the day, it's got to be something that I can actually, you know, just rip out at a moment's notice once either landlord or